Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
That cracks me up. It is Social Distance Central, the show with a COVID name that isn't about COVID during the COVID era. I'm Bit Nizar. With me is the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just finished watching Alphonso Davies and Bayern Munich pick up an important 1-0 win over Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga. And excited to talk some hockey with you now ahead of a big announcement that we're going to have live on Sportsnet 650 with Gary Bettman in just about an hour and a half from now.
Yeah, that comes up at 1:30. It'll be carried live here on Sportsnet 650. Actually, at 1 o'clock, Tim and Sid take over our airwaves leading up to that press conference. They're going to have a star-studded lineup both before and after Commissioner Bettman's announcement, which, you know, expected to be kind of following up what we already kind of know over the weekend with the NHLPA voting 29-2 in favor of return to play-in, play-off format. A bit of a follow-up on that, and also probably some clarification on the draft. Outside of that, I don't know what you're expecting, Batch. That's kind of what I'm expecting to hear from Commissioner Bettman. And I think I want to clarify something I may have said yesterday. And I don't want to get too ahead of myself of, you know, the steps coming of returning to play. The announcement of the format is not a declaration of they're ready to play, right? There's still steps that they have to get through phase two, phase three, and then get ready for games in phase four. So you're making the right steps, yes, but the playoff format is not a declaration that they are for certain coming back to play.
No, but it is a declaration of intent to come back and play. And that's the most important thing. Certainly, as we have experienced over the last couple of months, really anything can happen. It feels like
it can all change in 2 days, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
right?
if things trend the way they are, then yeah, things look optimistic for July. But, you know, there's that second wave we've heard. And while that has been suggested that may come in the fall, you know, things can change so rapidly right now. So if something happens where the NHL has to pull the reins back, they still may. But as far as being optimistic of things trending in the right direction, the league is taking the right steps of, hey, if this continues, we have an opportunity here to capitalize on an opening to finally get some games in. And this is what it has to look like if we do that.
Yeah, so I imagine we'll get formal confirmation of the things we've had reported this week about the 24-team playoff format and how that's going to work with the 5-game play-in series. What I'm interested to hear about, though, is the draft, because initially there was a lot of talk that the draft was going to happen in June. It seems like there was a lot of pushback from people on the hockey side of the National Hockey League business, and now there's talk that it's going to be a draft lottery in late June. We saw reports about that yesterday. I've seen a couple reports today on Twitter suggesting that they're going to announce that the draft lottery is going to include the 7 teams that won't be part of the playoff format, but will also include the 8 teams that are eliminated from that first round of 5-game play-in series. So we'll get clarification on that. And if that's the case, then this will be the only time, in theory, of course, knock on wood, that we don't have to go through another pandemic. But as far as we know in the past, and as far as we expect in the future, the only time where a team could play playoff games and then also win the draft lottery.
Yeah, I'm curious, and this may come up in the press conference later today with Bettman, which you can hear live on Sportsnet 650. I'm curious if these are going to be treated as regular season games, like the play-in games, right? They're not playoffs. They're not regular season. So do, like, stats count towards regular season stats, right? Because some guys are chasing some pretty impressive marks, right? 50 goals and all that sort of stuff. Will they count towards regular season stats? Will they count it as playoff stats? I'm curious to see how that looks.
Yeah, I would imagine that the answer is that they count as neither. And, you know, the way I look at this is something that the Western Hockey League does, where in the WHL in years past, if two teams finish tied for the last playoff spot, they actually play a play-in game.
Yeah.
They don't go on tiebreakers, but that play-in game doesn't count as playoff stats, doesn't count as regular season stats. It's sort of its own entity. And that's how I would expect them to deal mm-hmm. with those five-game series, just because, like, yeah, they're sort of playoffs, but at the same time, you know, there's eight teams that didn't technically make the playoffs, and they're not regular season because you're playing the same team multiple times in a row, and no team is going to have reached the 82-game mark by the end of those five-game series anyway. So, it'll probably be one of those things that it's just sort of a technicality, and when we look back on this year in the future, it'll just be, oh yeah, that was the weird year where they had to do the play-in format. But we'll get clarification on all of these questions and all of these things with Gary Bettman at 1:30, and that's really what I'm interested to hear, is how the draft lottery, how the draft is going to work, how they expect to carry forward with that, and whether there is the possibility that a team that would not have been in the draft lottery previously could get the number one overall pick. So let's say, for example, the Montreal Canadiens upset the Pittsburgh Penguins in the play-in. Does that mean that the Penguins now have a chance at the first overall pick? And then part of me wants to see something like that happen, just because, you know, some men want to watch the world burn. And I know the hockey world would go absolutely bonkers if a team, you know, like the Carolina Hurricanes or the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Edmonton Oilers, who were having a great season, somehow find a way to lose their play-in round and then end up with the first overall pick as well.
Crosby and Lafreniere on a line. That's, you know, doesn't sound terrifying for the next 5 years at all.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
So that's coming up at 1 o'clock. At 1:30 is the announcement. Tim and Sid take over at 1 o'clock. Before we get there, Yannick Hansen will join our show at 12:35. The Honey Badger are going to join us. And one of the things we're doing here on Social Distance Central is we're going to try to bring some guys on that you can ask questions to. So we're going to have a mailbag, and Yannick Hansen's our first one in this series of mailbags. So if you want to text in your questions, many people have already done so on Twitter, as both Batch and I gave them the chance to submit their questions at Batch Hockey, at Bic650, and at Sportsnet650. You can also text in 650-650 throughout the show until Yannick comes on, and we'll try to get him your question. So that's coming up later today. Also later in the week, we announced it yesterday, of course, and we put it out on Twitter. Game of Takes, Batch.
Yes, I'm so excited for this. This is going to be awesome.
Yes, it's a play on the Game of Thrones, but also what we're kind of doing is basically a King of the Hill type thing. We give you a topic for the week. You get send us your takes. We're going to choose two people, and between them, they're going to go on air on Thursday and basically go head-to-head, and whoever wins is the keeper of the Canucks throne for a week, until and then you stay on until you are dethroned. So the topic that we're doing this week is Jim Benning. We briefly touched on it yesterday, just looking at the entire tenure of Jim Benning. But even just yesterday, Batch, we brought it up, and the flood of texts came in of people trying to get into the Game of Takes, because it's a polarizing topic.
Certainly it is. And Jim Benning, throughout his tenure as Canucks general manager, has been very polarizing. So we want to hear from you. If you are a Jim Benning supporter, if you think that the draft picks that have been made during his tenure as general manager are worthy of him, you know, doing a great job, and you're a big fan of what he's done in that regard, you know, text us 650-650. Send us a tweet. Give us your thoughts. Conversely, if you're on the other side of the argument, if you think that Jim Benning has not done a great job as the GM of the Vancouver Canucks, and we went through a litany of reasons when we discussed it yesterday, the Louis Erickson signing, the Olli Juolevi draft pick, whatever it might be, let us know your takes on that as well. And then two of you will go head to head on the air right here on Social Distance Central on Thursday. And then we'll put it out to you, the listeners, to vote who had the more compelling argument. And someone will ascend to the throne for the first week of Game of Takes. And then they will stay atop that throne and continue to compete and contend going forward until someone else knocks them off.
I feel compelled to ask, what happens to the person that doesn't make it?
What do you mean?
Like, one person wins, one person loses. What happens to the person that loses?
Well, you know what they say about Game of Thrones. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. So,
yeah, we got some gadgets that we got set.
At the very least, you get to be on the radio and you get to have your voice heard, right? So even even if you don't win, still a cool opportunity for you to be a part of our show and to, you know, be a part of the exchange and the verbal barbs that I'm sure will go back and forth on social media as a result of Game of Takes.
We do want to touch on your questions as they come in through the show, you know, not just for Yannick Hansen, keep those coming in. But Eric chimes in on this. Again, this is one of the things that has to get sorted out through this announcement that's coming up at 1:30 on Sportsnet 650 from Commissioner Bettman. Will the Canucks have their first round pick this year if they lose in the play-on round? Again, nothing formal has been announced in that regard, but logic would dictate if you don't make the 16-team playoffs, you retain your, you know, that's essentially saying that you didn't make playoffs.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen is they're going to get an opportunity to work it out with the teams. But if you don't make the playoffs, then you don't make the playoffs, right? It's easier to discern from that point.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen a couple reports that we expect that the draft lottery will include not only the seven teams that are done for the season and aren't going to be part of this 24-team playoff, but it is also expected to include the eight teams that lose in that initial play-in round. So if it does include those 15 teams, then that is what it would normally include, right? Like, if you don't make the top 16 and make the playoffs, you're in the lottery. And to me, you're right. If you're trying to read between the lines of how this may work, that is what I would expect is Canucks win the play-in round, then they count as a playoff team and they don't have their draft pick. If they lose in the play-in round, then they would retain their draft pick. And again, as we talked about earlier, wouldn't it be interesting if the Canucks lose in that play-in round, but retain their pick and it ends up being a high pick, but at the same time, they also sort of got playoff games in. I'm sure there are a lot of people in the Canucks fan base that would actually like that outcome because you get that playoff like intensity and then you also get to have a pretty high draft pick potentially as well.
You could satiate both sides of the market, right? The
have your cake tank, and
yeah,
too, yeah.
And you could get both because, you know, realistically this year is kind of some found money to some degree, right? Because, okay, you confirmed Elias Pettersson was a superstar last year. And then this year was, okay, what is Quinn Hughes and how far along is he? Turns out he's amazing and he's a lot farther along than anybody could have expected. So to me, this coming into the season was about making an honest attempt into making the playoffs. They've done that, right? And if they go five games, you would like them to make the playoffs. But given everything that's happened right now, you do kind of throw some expectations out. But the job for this season has been completed because now moving forward, it's you got to make the playoffs every year moving forward now. And if this year you have that little quick play on and you still get your draft pick, that's an interesting turn of events, especially if it's a high draft pick, right? If you win some form of a lottery and get into that top three.
Yeah, but the other side of that coin is that then there's pressure that you're right. This is a team that's expected to make the playoffs going forward, but now you know that you're losing your pick next year, whether you make it or not. And that adds a whole different element to the conversation around the JT Miller trade, because next season, we still expect it to be an 82-game season and some sort of semblance of regular playoffs. But at the same time, do we know for sure that fans will be allowed back in arenas by November, December, when we expect that that season would be starting? The schedule is going to be different and likely more compressed because the season is going to be starting later, as we expect that this playoff format that we're going to get into won't begin until mid to late July at the earliest. So you're playing into September, October, and bumping the start of next season back. So it's not exactly like next season will be completely normal either. But it's an interesting conversation. And again, you can text us 650-650 with your thoughts on if there's a scenario where the Canucks lose the five-game play-in and retain their lottery pick. Is that something that you would like? You know, is that something that you would even prefer to them advancing to the actual playoffs? And, you know, I know many people would say, well, it's the playoffs, you want to advance as far as you can. But as we know, in Vancouver, there are a lot of people that put a lot of weight in the draft. And, you know, in a year where things are a little bit different, you sort of get playoff games and you get your lottery pick. I'm sure there are people out there that could text in right now and tell us that they would be happy with that result.
Well, I think because a lot of people do look at the future, right? And you do need a bigger war chest of high-end players, right? The Canucks are close to getting to the final stage of what they're going to look like for the next decade, but they still need one to two more pieces. And I think people see the upside of getting a pick right now. Because, you know, when we were doing the exercise yesterday, and I continued last night, and we can get into it now, just of figuring out the lineup, should they play the Minnesota Wild? You kind of go through it, and it's exciting, but also at the same time, you understand that, like, physically, the one thing this team is lacking is speed, right? And high-end players tend to have pretty good speed. And like, Tanner Pearson's a good player, but he's in your top six. Is he necessarily the fastest? Brock Besser, obviously awesome, but is he necessarily the fastest? They could use a bit more high-end skating, and you can get that at the high end of the draft.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing that we could point to in terms of things the Canucks are going to have to worry about in the next few years is the number of players that were on pace for career years this mm-hmm. year. Tanner Pearson, a perfect example. JT Miller as well, although he seems to have really secured a spot in the top six, and you wouldn't necessarily expect his production to dip going forward. But when guys have career years, you don't necessarily know what to expect coming out of them. Could it be a blip on the radar for a guy like Tanner Pearson, or has he established himself as a guy that can be a consistent top six offensive producer? You know, these are questions that will be answered over the next few years, but there are many signs that could point to a lot of Canuck players reaching their ceiling this year. So there are still plenty of issues that you'd have to work out going forward with this team. And, you know, again, with all the uncertainty around next season, free agency will likely look different. Who knows what's going to happen with the salary cap? That could, you know, limit the Canucks' ability to make some of those changes even more through trade or free agency if the salary cap stays the same and they can't get out from Louis Erickson's contract or Brandon Sutter's contract. So when all of those factors come into play as well, it puts even more importance on the draft in an mm-hmm. era where it may be very hard to spend money on big free agents or to make trades, especially for a team that is getting close to being pretty capped out.
Both sides have very valid arguments. It's Mick Nazar and Brendan Batchelor here on Social Distance Central. This one's from Andrew from Vancouver. If we lose to Minnesota of all teams, we have more issues to worry about than the first round pick. That's to our text inbox, 650-650, which is flooding in with Jim Benning takes as well. Of course, again, Thursday, game of takes. Get your takes in about Jim Benning. We're going to choose two people, and you could be battling it out on air on Thursday for the throne for Social Distance Central. Okay, I do want to get into more specific Canucks Wild matchups.
Well, I just want to jump in because that's an interesting text about the Canucks losing to a team like the Wild. I think this isn't the greatest matchup for Vancouver, actually. If you look at some of the underlying numbers, if you look at how these two teams played each other this year, Minnesota did very well against Vancouver in the head-to-head meetings. You know, the Wild have been a lot better since Christmas or so. They had the fourth best power play in the league since January 1st, whereas the Canucks power play was much stronger earlier in the year and was dipping down the stretch. Now, of course, we know momentum isn't really going to play a factor here because of how much time off there has been. But this is a Minnesota Wild team that just underwent a coaching change relatively early prior towards, you know, the pause. So I wouldn't write off the Minnesota Wild at all. I think that they could be quite a tough out for the Vancouver Canucks in a matchup.
Yeah, for sure. And the Canucks, by and large, throughout the course of the season, have struggled against teams that are really structurally sound. And Minnesota, okay, doesn't have necessarily high-end players, especially on the front line. But that top four D pairing is as strong as there is in the league, right? Suter, Brodin, Dumba, Spurgeon. That's an area where the Wild would have a pretty strong advantage. You know, you could say Quinn Hughes is probably the best defender in the series, although Suter's amazing, but that top four could really pose some problems to how the Canucks want to attack.
Yeah, it certainly could. And, you know, the thing that really jumps out for me is that Minnesota is a relatively low event team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're in the top half of the league in terms of giving up the fewest shots, and they don't take very many shots either in terms of the league average. 25th in the league in terms of the number of shots they average. Meanwhile, the Canucks are a high event team, and in some ways a high event team for the wrong reasons. They've given up the fourth most shots of any team per game this season. So that means that they rely on Jacob Markstrom a whole lot more.
But it is funny because they do look comfortable in those games. Like in games when they are like have to create chances and they are giving up some, they feel more comfortable than a team that has to remain patient.
Well, yes, but they're also a team that has a lot of trust in their goaltender.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we talk about not really knowing how specific guys are going to react to returning. Jacob Markstrom is a guy that the Canucks will need to be hot in order for them to not just win the Minnesota series, but to have any success beyond that. You know, the underlying numbers show that they have relied on him a lot this season. And if he comes back with any level of rust, or, you know, of course, he was out even before the pause with the meniscus injury, then it's going to be a lot harder for this team. You know, I think it might be oversimplifying things, but in many ways, the Canucks will go as far as Jacob Markstrom takes them. And if he is not able to come back in and regain the form that we saw from him most of this season, then that's going to be a tough series against the Minnesota Wild. Make no mistake about it.
I'll leave this question with you before we head out, and I want everyone to think about it and text it in. Because as I was just mentioning here, of one of the things this team does struggle with is team speed. And making my own lineup, I had to include Jake Virtanen in that group just for exactly that, the team speed. But going through it, like, you know, I've shared my thoughts on his season, and obviously he's progressed, but there's still some flaws in the game. I'm not sure I'm totally relying on him in the playoffs, but in this scenario versus Minnesota Wild, I do think his game could really translate into this particular matchup. So he was in mine. I'm curious who everyone else, like, just send us your scratches of who would be out. So that'd be about four or five guys, especially among the forwards. Yeah, for the forward group. It'd be, you know, McEwen, Erickson, Levo, Ferlin, Sutter, Beagle. It's those guys that are in the conversation. Who are you leaving out? That's what we want to know. 650, 650. We'll get to more of those. And also, Yannick Hansen, send in your questions for our mailbag with the Honey Badger coming up here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. Sugar. The Archies, going way back here on Social Distance Central. It is Vic Nizar and Brendan Batch. They're also social distancing. My place in Coquitlam. Batch is out in the valley. So we're doing our part for Social Distance Central. And it's, again, it's a show with a COVID name, but it's not about coronavirus. We're trying to get you ready for a scenario where the NHL does return to play. And there's an announcement expected to come at 1:30 today from Commissioner Gary Bettman. You'll hear it live here on Sportsnet 650. Tim and Sid will take over at 1 o'clock, and they'll take you all the way to 4 o'clock with a star-studded lineup of guests, both before and after the press conference. So that's all on the way here on Sportsnet 650. And also, we're going to talk to Yannick Hansen in just a couple of minutes, Batch. We're still getting a lot of questions in on our 650-650 text line as well. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be inviting people on to our show and allow the listeners to chime in with their questions.
Yeah, and I think we're going to try and make it a Tuesday regular segment, so you'll know that we'll have someone on that you can ask your questions to every Tuesday, and the Honey Badger, Yannick Hansen, will join us in just a couple of minutes for the first edition of the Tuesday Mailbag. There is still time to get your questions in now if you want to know anything about Yannick Hansen, about his time with the Vancouver Canucks, his time in the National Hockey League, his pro hockey career, or really anything at all. Text us 650-650, or you can reach us on Twitter at Batch Hockey, at Bic650, at Sportsnet650.
And the question for me, I think this one's from Mike, who usually texts in during the program for our mailbag there. Have you read any of those six books? I declared I would read six books in 6 weeks. Happy to declare I'm two down, four to go. But I think I'm behind schedule because I haven't picked up the third one yet. So I am behind. But we accept all questions. We are here to be transparent on the show. So appreciate the text in, Mike.
And looking at the text inbox as well, we've been talking about Jim Benning's tenure as the general manager, because that's
flooded with texts.
They ask exactly, because that's going to be a part of Game of Takes this week. Your chance to argue your case about Jim Benning on the air on Thursday. But Jordan from Saskatoon writes in and says, I think the best way to describe Jim Benning's tenure as GM is disoriented. I think Jim at times has lost his sense of direction, and a lot of the moves that he's made, especially with free agents, have been flawed. But I think his intentions were always to make the team better. His drafting, I think, honestly, has just been okay. He's hit on Besser, Pettersson, and Hughes, but he's made numerous mistakes. Ultimately, where he really lost a lot of my respect is the situation with Trevor Linden. So Jordan kind of sitting on the fence, and that's kind of where I am too. I think either side of the argument has points that make sense and you know, arguments that I can get behind. But the answer as to, you know, has Jim Benning been a complete success? No. Has he been a complete failure? I don't think you can say no to that either.
No, it resides somewhere in the middle. And like I was saying yesterday, the thing that's most surprising to me about the entire timeline here is the plans changed somewhere along the way, right? Obviously, you know, Travis Green comes in and became more about replenishing the cupboard of prospects and building for the future. Usually GMs don't get the opportunity to fail one plan and get to do a second plan, especially first time GMs. And so it just didn't work the first time. So I was more surprised of being retained. So I do think you have to look at it in two different tenures, but I understand why it's hard to separate that. And you look at it from the totality. And as somebody else texts in right now, GMs are hired to be fired. They're transition periods, and it's time for a change after the season. Look, we appreciate the text. Keep them coming in, and we're going to choose two people to compete for Game of Takes before Thursday. And there's going to be a lot of people to choose from because people are going for that throne batch. I like to see the early competition.
Yeah, we certainly picked a great topic for the first week because you're right. It's something that people would be arguing about on Twitter regardless of whether we had chosen it for Game of Takes this week. So people are emotional about this topic and Jim Benning, both positively and negatively, depending on how you view his time here. So we'll get to that on Thursday. We'll hear from a couple of listeners and we'll put the voting out to you who argued their case better.
Getting ready for Yannick Hansen. I've just been informed we played the Archies coming in. Obviously, it says Honey Honey in that. So, of course,
the Honey Badger.
I missed picking up on that one. But we'll give him a bunch of your questions, including for our mailbag. Just back to your thoughts on, you know, I feel like Yannick Hansen, like one of the, I don't want to say cult players. I'm not sure what the right word for it is, but certainly someone that everyone in this market looks upon kindly from that era.
Yeah, and I think, you know, oftentimes players like Yannick Hansen are well received, not just with the Canucks, but with any team they play on, because you can see the work ethic, you can see the heart, you can see the passion. And, you know, as much as many fans in this market have great passion for the Vancouver Canucks, when you see a player that embodies the way you feel about the team on the ice, it's hard not to get behind them. And of course, it makes it easier that Yannick is such a great guy as well, and was a great teammate to all sorts of guys during his time with the Vancouver Canucks. So, you know, the fact that, you know, he gave everything every time he stepped on the ice in a Canuck jersey, and, you know, was a big part of some pretty good teams too, means that he's very well looked upon in Vancouver and will continue to be.
He joins us on the line now. Yannick, welcome to Social Distance Central. We don't usually like to talk a lot about the coronavirus or anything like that, but we should ask, how are you keeping with all that's happening?
I think we're keeping well, obviously trying to keep the kids contained somewhat. Weather clearing up a little bit makes it a little bit easier, getting them outside a little bit more. But trying to... obviously keep them as engaged as possible so they don't notice it too much.
Obviously you're not playing now, but I'm just curious your thoughts of, as we get ready to, you know, the steps get made towards coming back and you know, how this playoff format looks. You know, what have you taken away from the NHL's plans of how they intend to come back, and what to you in your mind from a player's mindset would be the difficult part in getting ready for this?
Obviously, it's twofold. It's obviously a lot of money you're talking about here. If you're canceling playoffs and all that stuff, and that's gonna hurt everybody. So I'm assuming everybody's got some pretty prick pull to get back to playing. Obviously, you're gonna be playing for empty buildings. One of the best things about playing hockey at this level is the fans. It's gonna be strange. It's gonna be weird. You're scoring an overtime goal and dead quiet in the building except for your teammates. I mean, it's something else, something different. I completely get why they have to get back to playing and all that stuff, but it's going to be strange to say the least.
Former Canuck Yannick Hansen with us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. In terms, Yannick, of these guys having to now ramp back up after, in many cases, not being able to be on the ice for quite a long stretch, potentially up to 2 months. What do you think the biggest challenge for some of these players will be in getting that conditioning back and getting those skating legs back?
Getting hurt. Getting hurt is the biggest thing, I think, especially when you're sitting still. It's always what you're worried about coming into camp, because you go from 0 to 100 in one day, and then you're on it. Here it's even more. You don't have time to gradually get into it. Obviously, they're gonna get 2 or 3 weeks to get ready, to get practicing and stuff like that. But still, you got to hit the ground running. Younger teams are obviously going to have a little bit of an advantage there. They're not as injury prone. They get back to the groove easier, stuff like that. Again, I just hope that somehow that the top teams, that were the top teams when they stopped this, come out on top as well. I'd hate to see one of the teams that shouldn't be in the playoff do well on account of this. It will throw a wrinkle in the playoffs. I get why they're wanting more teams in. Everybody has theoretically a chance to get in. Obviously, there's some big market teams among those teams that probably shouldn't have made it. That'll draw some extra stuff as well. But again, to keep some sort of I don't know what you'd say, like fairness to it, I really hope that the top teams, the teams that are supposed to be in, those are the teams that comes through. Sure, there might be an upset or something like that in that first play-in round or stuff like that, but I really hope it doesn't go any further than that, just for the integrity of the playoff, of the season that was played.
And you talk about maybe younger teams potentially having a leg up. Where do you think the Canucks fit into that conversation? Obviously, they've got guys like Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes right now, who are young players that might be able to get up to speed a little bit quicker. And then, of course, Jacob Markstrom being back healthy as well, potentially getting guys like Michael Ferland and Josh Levo back from injury too.
Yeah, obviously there are some positives. Obviously the horses on the Canucks these days are young horses. It's not the old guard anymore. So I think they do have an advantage there. I also think they're probably better positioned this type of playoff than they would have been if it would have just been regular. So this might serve Vancouver better. Again, it's hard to say. There's quite a few teams that had injury problems going into the playoffs. Obviously, most of the players should be healthy by now. I know there are some long-term injuries here and there, but everybody should be healthy. So there's definitely not that excuse hanging around the playoff this time around.
We'll get to a couple of your questions from the text lines in just a second for our mailbag with Yannick Hansen. Still your chance to get them in, 650, 650. Yannick, I just want to go back to something you said, though, about playing in empty arenas. You know, just as a player, what's like the most unnerving thing when you are playing? Is it like when the crowd is silent, or you know, what's something that stands out to you when you are playing?
It's twofold, home and away, obviously. Back when we were playing, you step into San Jose, and it was like skating uphill for the first 12 minutes in that barn. Impossible to play. They just came at you in droves, and the crowd was loud and everything. You felt like you were skating in molasses. Hard to get around, hard to get anything done. You couldn't finish a check. And again, at home, it's like you're being pushed. You're skipping around. You can go for hours and hours out there, it feels like. So it's really psychologically, it's in your head. You feel like you can walk on water when the crowd is behind you, and obviously when it's the other way around, you gain momentum by something as small as a hit at home, where on the road it's just the other way, like a hit that really means nothing. It's just a close, finished checks can swing momentum, and okay, the crowd goes wild. Let's do this a little bit more, and all of a sudden you're hounding pucks, you're hemming teams in. It's a lot easier to do at home in your building when the crowd is with you. Guys tend to squeeze their sticks a little bit more when it is like that. So turnovers happen, bad plays. Guys are human. You take that element out of the playoffs this time around, and there are some really, really hard buildings to play in, where teams will have a little bit of an advantage when it comes to that, where some home teams aren't as intimidating as other buildings.
Yannick Hansen with us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. Time now for the Tuesday mailbag as we take your questions and put them to Yannick. And so let's start off. First of all, we have Parksville Rob writes in on the text line, Yannick, and asks your view on how the league seems to sometimes throw the whistle away during the playoffs, or referees in particular. He says he finds it very frustrating from a fan perspective when the NHL seems to want to get rid of clutching and grabbing during the regular season, but then those penalties don't get called as much during the playoffs. How did you view that during your time playing and now watching NHL games as well?
There's three seasons in the hockey season. There's playoffs when referees get all the memos and we get all the rules. It's all fresh. Everybody's sat and studied them and been told about them, what can you can't do, and they're calling everything within the vicinity of a penalty. Then as the regular season progresses, gets further away from that, teams get to play a little bit more. Referees don't want to decide games by calling the penalty, and that only gets that much more highlighted in the playoffs, where the leash gets longer on what you're allowed to do. Again, they don't want to be the difference maker. They don't want to be calling a thin penalty causing a team to go out. They want the teams, obviously, to decide who goes on, but again, within the boundaries of the rules. But there are definitely there's a big range there as to what gets called in the preseason and what gets called in the playoffs. I think it's fine. I think that's the way it should be. Let the teams decide it, obviously, within reason. But again, you don't want to see a game where there's 12 power plays one way and 9 the other way. I'd rather have it a couple each way then, and then everybody knows the rules we're playing under.
We got a wide range of questions here yet, and so we'll just go through them here. This one's from Evan. What has been your favorite part of retiring that you couldn't do while you played?
Well, I haven't been able to do that much since I've retired. It's not having to know where you're going to be 2 months from now, what hotel I'm going to be staying at, where I'm going to be eating. The thing where my daily day was planned down to the smallest details 8 months in advance, and you're kind of locked into that. You get up in the morning and kind of look out the window, okay, we're going to go out today or what's going to happen. But it's the fact that you're not tied down to anything specific that given day.
Lottie writes in on Twitter and asks, do you have any plans for your future, or are you just enjoying life with your family right now? I'm assuming talking about potentially getting back into hockey in some manner if you want to.
I could definitely see me getting back into hockey at some point. I don't have anything right now. Before all this got shut down, I helped out quite a bit around my boys' hockey team, helping them get their skating going and stuff like that. But as far as a little more detailed or directions right now, I don't really know where that's going. Like I said, I could definitely see me getting back into hockey. Obviously, that's where my passion is, where my knowledge is and stuff like that. But right now, I don't have anything planned.
Nielsen wants to know, would that be either coaching or is that scouting, or do you have a preference?
No, I don't think it would be scouting. I'd be a little more hands-on, closer to the ice. I'd say that's probably where I'd want to be. I was off the ice for a little bit, but again, getting back on the ice is always nice. Twirling around, skating, teaching. Obviously, I feel like I have a lot of stuff that I can give back to younger players. Whether it's the little 5-6-year-olds, they got to learn how to use their edges, or it's 15-16-year-olds who's thinking about going to major junior and kind of getting them prepared. There's a wide range. That's where I'm not really sure what it is I want to do. But again, I'm definitely leaning more in that direction.
Bailey writes in, and you talk about being involved with your kids' teams, asking if you see any Sedinery from your twin boys.
No, not yet. They're obviously jumping in feet first. They were like I was when I started, fearless. They just want to play, go. Sometimes we got to pull them back a little bit, stuff like that. But it's extremely fun to see and excited to see how quick they pick it up and learn and the enjoyment they get out of it. Meeting new friends and stuff like that, it's a whole new world for them. So it's a treat to see.
I got a question about Vancouver specifically. This one's from Prabjot. Is Vancouver sushi better or Danish sushi?
Vancouver. No question there. They've gotten it after it in Denmark. I'd be honest about that. Sushi wasn't a big thing until, I don't know, 5-6 years ago maybe in Denmark. Before that, it was non-existent. So Vancouver definitely have a leg up there.
Colin writes in on Twitter as well, and he wants to know your favorite moment of your time with the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, there's many. The first moments you're obviously remembering is your first game. The excitement, everything that runs through your head, your first goal, the feeling you get when I've made it, and I'm not talking about getting a call up, like I've made it. I'm here for good now. Like somebody's gonna have to come in and take my spot in order to get me out of here. Obviously, the playoff runs we had, 11. There are so many moments. It's so hard to pick one because they're all so special and hold a special place for me. But like I said, there is numerous occasion that you look back on with great fondness.
People love to, you know, learn about the relationships. Duncan asking, who's your best friend on the Canucks team?
Me and Burr got along real great. Mason Raymond and Snyder, Edler, the guys I came up with as well. I sat next to Corey for many years in the dressing room as well. We were in the minors as well. Edler, I got to know at our draft back in 2004. We had the same agent. So the kind of guys you got up with together, obviously the twins, because we've been together for so long and have a little bit of a European connection, you're drawn a little bit towards them as well. We had some great teams with some great friendships. So there was a lot of fun to be having around there.
And last one for you, because people found out you're coming on and they sent us the clip A lot of people sent us the clip. You mentioned Corey Schneider. He famously did an impression of you. Do you have an impression of Corey Schneider? That's what a lot of people are asking.
I think I did it. I did it on my Hockey Night segment a little bit a couple of weeks later about him. But it's not verbal. It's visual. So it wouldn't do well over the radio.
Well, we appreciate it. Stay safe, and thanks a lot for joining us here on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
That's former Canuck Yannick Hansen. those relationships from those teams have stood the test of time, and it's always just funny to hear how the interplay between them.
Yeah, and it's, I talked about Yannick's style of play really endearing him to the fan base here. You know, those teams in general, and the fact that you could tell that those guys really enjoyed spending time together, and, whether it was Bieksa with, the little barbs at his teammates whenever he would speak, or something like Corey Schneider doing a Yannick Hansen impression, it makes them that more endearing to a fan base when you see the guys are enjoying themselves like that and get along really well. And certainly those were good teams, so I'm sure when you're winning as much as they were, it's pretty easy to get along with the guys that you're going to battle with.
All right. Sorry for if we didn't get to your questions. There's one or two we didn't get to, just running out of time here. We'll be doing these series for a while here, so we'll have someone for next week as well, so you can get your question in then. Also, thanks for all the texts for the Jim Benning takes. We'll handpick two people. We'll reach out to you and get you set for coming on Thursday for Game of Takes. We're going to get out of here. Batch, thanks a lot. Coming up is Tim and Sid from 1 to 4. The announcement with Gary Bettman, the press conference at 1:30, coming up in moments on Sportsnet 650.